is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Brett Kavanaugh, the confirmation hearings, you were either into those or you were not. I know some people really tuned into every word and others not so much. One thing you can say, friends, it absolutely showcased our political divide in this country. It was referred to as a circus by Senator Lindsey Graham. Big story, we will be into that today. The New York Times steps up with an op-ed that is anonymous and breaking all the rules there. Quite something, actually. President Trump, the administration says they will not sit down with Mueller or provide written answers to these questions, potentially. That is most interesting. North Korea, Kim Jong-un comes out and expresses faith in President Trump just when he needs it the most, right? Turkey, Russia, and Iran, they meet in Tehran. You talk about three neighborhood bullies meeting. This would be the group right here, people. And they're meeting on Syria, Idlib, and we'll talk about that as well. What's going on with the Catholic Church again? Criminal investigations coming out of New York, friends. And, of course, one of the big stories this week, Colin Kaepernick, the ex-sports football player. You would love to hate or hate to love, either one, right? And Nike. They say just do it, and boy, they did it. We'll talk about that today as well, and we'll... A lot of news, friends. Let's get to the top of the program here, please, and welcome Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst. She trained in Israel, and she focuses on the impact of terrorism and its threat to America and the West. And also, Dennis Santiago is here. So you've got the best of the best here, people. He's a global risk and financial analyst. His subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. And God knows we can use some stability at this point, friends. All right, let's touch first, friends, on the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. Now, this was fascinating to me, and I have to admit to you all, it was a busy week, but I had to keep it playing in the back. You know how it is when you're busy doing things, but you got to kind of keep it there. So I confess to all of you, I've seen a fair amount of it, certainly a lot of the circus playing out here. But it was historical. It was a historical time, and we needed to see what was going to happen here. So let's start off here and talk about one of the things that was pretty obvious when this thing started is it was actually getting quite embarrassing. I didn't know what was going to happen. Ilana, let's start with your thoughts on that, since I know you really took a lot of this in with the Kavanaugh hearings. For me, when I started to see Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Blumenthal, all the senators start with the, a lot of delays and back and forth talking over each other, and kind of started to look like Parliament out of the UK a little bit. I thought they were going to start in a fisticuffs maybe, you know, Ilana? It was getting pretty wild there right out of the gate. I wasn't sure this thing was ever going to get started. That was a surprise to me. How about you?
I was surprised by the intensity of the interruptions. It was nonstop, first from the senators themselves, mm-hmm. and then from the gallery. Hysteria, really unhinged hysteria, the screaming of hired rabble-rousers in the gallery. And afterwards, they were showing pictures of somebody paying them off, you know, outside the Capitol building. That surprised me a lot. It shouldn't have, I suppose, but I expected a little bit more decorum, certainly from the senators.
Right, right.
But
right.
I was also amazed at the quiet demeanor that Brett Kavanaugh showed throughout the hearing.
Amazing.
Despite
amazing.
The brutal assault that he got from everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was amazing. I'm wondering, though, with Grassley, Chairman Grassley, should he have, you know, he actually apologized later in that day and said, well, you know, I know that I often say the confirmation hearings, it either runs you or you run it. And I let you all run me today, but it won't be that way tomorrow. Should Grassley have taken more control of that right out of the gate, or was he smart to let it play out the way it played out in day number one?
I think he was very smart to let it play out, number one, and let these people get their energies out. I mean, you know, I was entertained, right? I mean, you know, like, here you go. I bet there was some Las Vegas odds maker bookie making bets on, you know, who was the dumbest senator in the room. And, you know, it was a contest between Cory Booker and Kamala Harris.
They'd be up for awards for that, buddy.
and clearly there was a plan. This is a coordinated plan. All of this stuff that is happening is meant to delay the process as much as possible. But it's not, because you know what? Kavanaugh is like the coolest cucumber in the room. Takes it in and then answers the question back, and they fire one at him. This guy should be on the Supreme Court. You know, he doesn't phase for anybody.
You have to have a lot of self-control, Dennis. You have to have, I mean, let's face it. I mean, you really have to have an enormous amount of self-control and discipline. Let's talk about this New York Times op-ed a moment here. I mean, have you ever seen this, and should they have done it? I mean, Dennis, what do you think?
Oh, journalistically?
Yeah.
It's
a loaded question, right?
No, it's easy. The editor should have told people, you know, go get bent. This thing is no good. I mean, you know, and you, God, I tell you what, though, it generates all kinds of theories on the internet, right? So I've seen everything from, like, conjecture that it was somebody in a White House. I think what's really happening there is that, you know, like, this is a lot of common sentiment that's out there. I have no idea who wrote the thing. It would just as easily be a trial balloon that the New York Times is trying to run, because, you know, when you got nothing, just start shooting stuff off in the air. But journalistically, total bonehead move.
Total bonehead move. Yeah. Dennis, what you just said, I think for me is key. When you say, I kind of really thought the trial balloon comment I'm speaking of here, and I really kind of had that feeling, Ilana, that I don't know why, but my gut was sort of exactly that this was a real stunt and kind of a trial balloon program exercise on the part of the New York Times, quite frankly, in doing this. But here's the thing that I wonder there. All right, so Ilana, this thing runs in this publication. It's out there in full broad daylight. Everybody around the world is talking about it. Okay, oh, what's happening? Someone from the inside, again, they're calling from inside of the house kind of thing. That was the storyline out there. To me, they stretched the whole news cycle out on this. It went on for days of everybody denying that it ever happened. Why did they put so much attention to this? And why didn't the administration just ignore the whole thing?
Well, I think maybe the people who came out and said, I didn't do it, felt they had to sort of circle the wagons around the president and make sure, first of all, that they weren't going to be one of his targets in the coming days, but also because they felt that they really had to protect him. And that means that by protecting him, they had to assure the public that these breaches that they were talking about in the op-ed didn't really happen, or it didn't come from the highest echelon of the people around the president. And I don't know that that is maybe a valid approach to solving this problem, but it may explain why some people rushed in to say, I didn't do it. I heard one analysis that said that in trying to identify the person, they wanted to identify the style of writing.
Exactly.
And they found that this op-ed was several styles of writing. And it occurred to me that this may have been a committee effort.
Very interesting. At the end of the week, there was some real dialogue about Robert Mueller about, okay, the president is not going to sit down with the special counsel, which is what we've all been advising him anyways, not to sit down with him. And furthermore, that not only will he now sit down, but he's probably not going to submit any answers in writing otherwise as well. So that was kind of interesting. And I think this is sort of now, my guess is this is the point where the Mueller investigation is probably going to fall apart or come to an end. But it doesn't look like, Dennis, it's going to do that before the midterm, is it?
No, it's not going to do it before the midterm. We're approaching the 60 days to go to an election, right? So it's quiet time, right? It's you hit that quiet period where everybody has to, like, tone it down because, you know, it's part of law.
Right.
And so we're getting there. You can feel it in the air that people are beginning to get ready to tone it down. And, you know, Mueller, you know, what's he really got to fight with at this point?
Well, we don't know everything he's got.
All of his convictions are well, like we think, petty theft.
We think, yeah, we believe that's what's out on the public square. We don't know what else he might have or what they're working on behind all of this, Dennis. But your point is taken. But you expect them to be quiet then. Now you're probably right between now and the election, and you're right with something in the air. I get that. And you're either right with your comment about, like, it's nothing and it's going to sizzle away, or there's going to be a bomb that's going to be dropped somewhere. But obviously all this would have to happen after the midterm, I guess, here.
Because they're hoping they've got the House back.
Well, that's going to be a factor in all of this, exactly what happens. And don't forget, let me add one other thing, in, my friends, that you also seen the again, it was a low-end administrator, campaign official in the Papadopoulos guy. He got 14 days of jail for lying, that evidently, and that's kind of a mixed bag as well. I think it's a nothing burger, but again, it was more fodder and news for the crazy people out there in the cycle that, you know, people are going to jail and people are being all kinds of things on the Trump administration. Let's change this tempo a little bit, Ilana, and talk about North Korea, please. This was a surprise to me. The relationship has been very, very odd in the last many months here, a bit. Everybody's been kind of waiting to see or if the other shoe is going to drop with Kim Jong-un. And not knowing where things are at, Pompeo's visit, the president asked Pompeo to cancel that just a couple of weeks ago, you might remember. And it sort of is at the verge where things look like they may be, you know, kind of falling apart a little bit, although it's been quiet. Well, Kim Jong-un comes out and he expresses faith in President Trump's commitment to ending their nation's hostile relations, he says. And he's frustrated by, you know, questions about his willingness to denuclearize and wants his goodwill measures to be met in kind, he says. But that kind of caught everybody by a little surprise here that just happened in the last couple of days here. What do you make of that?
We really don't know enough. This man comes from a long line of people who deceive and use language that is acceptable to the other side when they're actually pursuing their own agenda. And I don't think we know what's going on in North Korea. There's a lot of talk about the fact that they're continuing to develop their missiles despite the agreement that they had that Kim and Trump made. And I think that this declaration of Kim's sounds very good, but I think, as Reagan said, we need to trust but verify. And verification, I think, is really what this is all about.
Yeah.
We don't know what they're doing, and the words are good. We know that, for example, he's taken down all the anti-America billboards that
That's
they
right.
had there,
That's
and
right.
they've replaced them with mm-hmm. with other things, you know. And that's so that's a good step, and mm-hmm. that is a step of some sort of that could invoke some sort of confidence. But on the other hand,
right.
The word, it's just words right now.
Right, right. No, that's good. What you just say there a minute, let me segue over to Dennis, and I want to talk about the leaders meeting in Tehran as well in a second here. But that is an interesting point, Dennis, real quickly, that Ilana mentions there, I've noticed there's a lot, they're both very careful, right? If you one thing you notice right now with Kim Jong-un and President Trump, they're both being very, very careful not to insult each other. They both are, which is a very good sign, actually. Back to Ilana's point that a lot of that really harsh rhetoric and billboards and noise over there and we hate you kind of talk coming from North Korea. But Trump has toned it way down as well, very careful not to insult Chairman Kim. That's probably, well, that's a big product of the summit, actually. That's what that is, in a relationship and the start of something. So are you still confident something good can happen out of this, Dennis?
I'm very confident. I mean, I have a very different view from, you know, most other strategic analysts on this. And then I'm pretty positive about what I'm seeing here and reading the signs. You know, the president of South Korea is going to go visit Pyongyang in the middle of September. Their objective is to meet in the north and then in the aftermath of it to open liaison offices in each other's capitals. I mean, you know, so this is the kind of substantive stuff that Trump was saying, hey, we need to wait until some of these fundamentals are put in place. So there's no need for Pompeo to go over there yet, because if Pompeo goes to North Korea, and it basically gets all the hawks excited that we're going to be confrontive with them again, you know, because that's what they're into. And I don't want that. So I'm going to let a few other things come into place before we do things. There is a lot going on there underneath the hood that if you're only looking to start a fight, you're not going to see. You got to look for these little bits and pieces of things that are moving along, like, you know, changes in billboards. And that substantive. Right. This is a 75-year-old war. Mm-hmm. The race right now is, will they declare an end to the war first or denuclearize first? And that's the argument that they're having.
Right, right. Quickly, I want to talk to you about a couple other topics here before we lose time here, guys. Northwestern Syria, in a city in an area there called Idlib that we've been hearing a lot more about, it's kind of, let me say, the last stronghold of a lot of rebels there. And now, a couple of things going on here real quickly. Ilana, let me have you speak to this quickly. Turkey, Russia, and Iran have just met in Tehran. Quite a meeting, actually. The three of them met, and these countries, and talking about this particular area of Syria. There's a lot of speculation. I've watched several videos out there of some of the people in Syria, the Syrians, that are very concerned that Assad is going to use chemical weapons again, and or Russia, with their blessing, to try to put them out of their misery out there. And they're actually creating bunkers underneath the ground and doing all kinds of things. The civilians are now, with their kids. They're creating bags to go over the kids' heads because they've seen what's happened. Do you suspect, number one, that's going to happen out there, Ilana? And what do you make of this meeting here that happened?
Well, the meeting was very interesting because each country has its own agenda in Syria. And Russia and Putin, rather, and Rouhani were taking the same position, whereas Erdogan wanted to have some sort of an agreement that would be between them that could forestall any kind of attack such as they're anticipating. But Russia and Putin did not agree to have a ceasefire. And they, in fact, it's suspected that they may actually be encouraging Assad to do whatever he has to do to wipe out this last stronghold.
Would that include chemical weapons, Ilana? Would that include that, do you think? You think they'd use them?
It's very hard to know. You know, I think it was in 2011, sometime in that time period, Assad was asked to destroy all of his chemical weapons.
Right.
And there was a big to-do about the fact that he destroyed them, and he announced that he had destroyed them. Well, he actually destroyed only 11% and sent a lot of the other chemical weapons. They either hid them in Syria or sent them over into the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon.
Right.
So and some of it they gave away to other you know actors. So nothing that you hear from this part of the world is necessarily true.
Right.
It looks like these talks have basically failed.
Yeah, it's hard to follow that. You're exactly right, Dennis. Quick, Opine. Give me a quick word on that. Your thoughts about this, and do you think they would be so foolish enough to use chemical weapons? I mean, would they do that again? Do you think?
Assad is a madman. And he full well knows that there are 2.5 million people in the Idlib region and 10,000 or 20,000, I think is the estimated number of jihadis, the fighters that are there. We have no skin in this game in terms of being able to impact it because it's our fault that these people are there. And Putin is trying to find a way to get Assad to not be a madman and barrel bomb these people.
Wow.
Erdogan is, his fear is Assad will do this and he's going to have 2.5 million refugees streaming north.
Well, That's what's happening. They're going into Turkey exactly.
Yeah.
He doesn't want them there, obviously.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And the Iranians want them to do it because they know that all the people in Idlib are Sunni Muslims and they hate them.
All right. Listen, last story here, guys, is the Catholic Church, New York, New Jersey, state prosecutors, they've just announced here at the very end of the week that they're in the process of charging criminal investigations against the Catholic Church, multiple counts now. And this is a pretty wide swath of area here. We're talking about New York, New Jersey. Of course, we've seen what happened in Pennsylvania. That's also included here, and Connecticut. I wonder, Ilana, what's your thoughts on, I mean, this is starting to really really get into the face of the church, and I sense something's different this time. And the church isn't reacting quick enough for a lot of people. Some people are saying this could be the end of a lot of things for the Catholic Church and the Pope specifically. Many are asking for the resignation of the Pope himself. A lot of people are saying he knew, and they knew. And, of course, the Vatican many times knows, and there's a cover-up. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, my feeling is that this has been going on for a very long time, and it has been covered up year after year, decade after decade, and it, you know, we always felt that the responsibility goes right up to the top, and there's no question in my mind that the somewhere in the papal chambers, people knew that this was
right,
going on,
exactly,
and they covered
exactly.
it up.
All right, Dennis, I've got 20 seconds left on this, please, so we got to get right to it. So tell me your thoughts on what happens to the church. Do they react in a stronger way? Does something happen to the Pope? What's the end result of this thing?
Well, you know, so I'm Roman Catholic, and I saw this stuff happen when I was a kid, including the abuse. Mm-hmm. I think the Catholic Church has gone too far down a path of not doing anything about this, that they've lost so much credibility, mm-hmm. that their ability to use what the church was originally for to galvanize people to do good in the world has eroded to nothing. Nothing to the point that there's a genocide going on against Christians and Catholics in Africa, and nobody cares. And the reason they don't care is because the Catholic Church has no credibility left.
I'm getting a lot of calls and a lot of communications in here, quite frankly, on our lines with the network about this, and people speaking out about it. Something's different this time. I don't know what it is, but we will see, people, what happens there. Tremendous thank you here, friends, to our two of our best and favorites here, Dennis Santiago, Ilana Friedman. Well, up next, one of the other big stories this week here, Nike, Colin Kaepernick, the NFL, football, yeah? Was this a good move, smart move? They say just do it. They did it. We got an explosive panel conversation coming up with law enforcement, military, and social justice as Viewpoint rolls on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Well, the story that never goes away, never goes away. It continues onward. Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback, the ex-quarterback football player that has become, I guess many say, a social justice warrior, and very controversial on both sides of this conversation. So he is now the spokesman and the top guy there for Nike. Nike takes a big gamble, many believe. In fact, many people thought they were out of their minds and didn't know what they were doing. But I'm wondering if that was really the case, friends, because they do a lot of focus groups, a lot of discussion, a lot. Let me just tell you right now, I was in this business for 25 years in boardrooms when it comes to advertising and marketing, and I know what went on there when Nike made this decision. I mean, I totally understand this from a philosophical standpoint and why, but there's a lot more to this story. I mean, you've got the social justice aspect of it or not. You have our law enforcement community, which has been ridiculed by this conversation. You've got, many would believe, the ignorance of the National Football League front and center, some would say. And then you get Nike, which is just really looking to profit from these kinds of things, many would say. Wow. Well, It's a good discussion here, friends, on Viewpoint, and let's get started here. And please welcome Del Wilbur is here. Del is a former CIA and Department of Defense Intelligence and counterterrorism officer with a focus on technical and human intelligence collection activities. Very interesting. Dr. Bev is with us, Beverly Jackson. Beverly is a psychotherapist, spent 20 years counseling experience. And let me just tell everybody, Dr. Bev has been with America Out Loud from the beginning. She's an awesome lady, and she's been out for a while. She had been sick herself, going through a personal health problem herself. So this is the first time she's been back on air for us in quite some time. And interesting about Dr. Bev, I want you to plant in your mind. I'm curious to get her views on this, because she has more Republican, leans more that way. She's a black American, but grew up in a Democratic family, but is definitely more Republican today. And I was curious to get her views on this whole social justice conversation. And Nike, was it a good move or a bad move? So it should be an interesting conversation. And also in the panel, it's so awesome to have here Dave Smith. David Smith is here, also known as Buck Savage in the law enforcement community. He's certainly one of the most recognized police trainers and authors in the industry today. He uses the science of human performance combined with humor to train officers to win through his alter ego. Again, as I told you, J.T. Buck Savage. And it's always good to have all of you here. I admire all of you. And so I'm excited to have this panel conversation, friends. All right, so let's start here. I want to do this. Dr. Bev, I want to go right to you first. Not that you would be surprised by that, but I want to put you right on the spot here. Now, let me just ask you, because you have a different vantage point than all of us, because you've been a psychotherapist for many years, so you're a psychotherapist, you're a professional in that sense. You know the ins and outs of these things. You are a black American, and your political leanings, as I've already stated, tend to go more Republican, grew up in a Democratic family. So you kind of are an interesting person to have this conversation. Has politics and social justice invaded all of our society to a degree, maybe, that it's just become another annoyance that people put up with? What's behind all this, the political and social justice fight we're having? I want to get to the core of the problem first. Can you opine on that, please, for me, Dr. Bed?
Well, first of all, thank you for putting me on a platform with such amazing guests.
You're so welcome.
Secondly, I not only have Republican leanings, I am a Republican. So let's put that out there first, and let's not get it twisted. Okay? In terms of what's going on in America with this divisiveness, this anger, this meanness towards one another, it hurts my heart. And as in being a Republican, I'm disappointed. We Republicans know better. They should be acting better. We look at them to be better, to be a leader, to look at the facts, not divide us, to bring us together.
Let me ask you, Dr. Bev, do you think it's a fight the Republicans can't win? Is that kind of what you're saying?
It shouldn't even be a fight. This should not be a fight.
If it's not a fight, what is it then? Because let me say this to you, please, okay? As far as I can see, and you may agree with this or disagree with this, I don't know, but it seems to many of us that the Democratic Party immediately uses race or racism about on every topic. It's their go-to point. Now, do you agree with that statement, or am I totally off base to say that? Because I get the sense, and I just want to know what you think, but I get the sense that many in this, again, conservative movement, if you will, believe that this is just their go-to card, social justice and racism in this country. Talk to me.
Well, I can say, as a black American and I've had many microaggressions towards me in my many 62 years that I've been on this planet. However, I have never, ever, ever, even back from the civil rights days when I was the sixth grade being and integration came in. I was among the one of the first who walked through that door. And even walking in that time with dogs around me, barking at me, people saying racial things that as a sixth grader, I just had no understanding for. But by the end of that year, many of those parents, students, were my better best friends, and to this day, they still are. Life has changed. You know, Democrats, yeah, okay, I'll go for that. That may be their little fallback card. I'll let
you do agree with that then?
Yes.
Okay.
I would also say it's an inappropriate fallback.
Amen to that. Okay.
Inappropriate fallback card. And emotionally, it does us no good.
Well, because they're all using racism as a card somehow, as a political card. Dave Smith, let's get you in here, please, as a law enforcement gentleman. I think, listen, what are your thoughts from what you see, Dave, and train with, back to social justice and politics and what I've already addressed and what you hear Dr. Bev say? Pick that up, please.
You know, this is so complicated, and I have an evolving emotion on this Nike campaign. Kaepernick is an odd fellow. You know, what we're seeing in the NFL is this millionaires working for billionaires who are mad at America, but their emphasis appears to be, again, their primary social justice complaint is law enforcement is killing unarmed black men. And the problem we run into is that my whole career, law enforcement has tried to build bridges with different communities within the context of reaching out to the black community, in fact, all minority communities. And this goes back over 40 years. I remember programs when I was a young rookie with the Tucson Police Department in the mid-70s. We had all these programs designed to reach to the community. And now there's been this amnesia that has occurred throughout the media and our pundits that America needs to have community police. We've been doing community policing since the early 70s, trying to reach out. And this open antagonism, this hostility is really based on no real data. And you can see when actual facts are measured, law enforcement is not killing unarmed people. And but again, it cascades. It becomes more and more. Now, Nike jumps on this and further fans the flames by picking Kaepernick. And yet what is the reaction by American society is now is this huge reflection on social media on what is the nature of sacrifice. What do you believe?
Exactly.
So I think that the paradox is that what Nike's done is ignite almost a renaissance of values. I don't know that I agree with you. I don't think anybody sat in the marketing meetings and said, I know, let's reignite America's awareness of sacrifice and freedom. But that appears to be the ultimate effect that everyone's reflecting, and it's maybe in the end, this will actually turn out to be a very positive.
Oh, wow. Wow. What a great analysis, buddy. What a great analysis there. Del, let's have you jump in here, please. I like where we're going with some of this conversation here, and you hear, again, the law enforcement view there. You hear Dave, what he says about it. Here's the thing, Del, when it comes to a lot of patriots, and I would be one of them, I'm insulted when people are not respecting. I don't like people when they burn the flag. I don't like when they turn it upside down. I don't like they kneel in disrespect. I find it an insult, of course, to everything, to our military, to our law enforcement, to our heroes, to our country, to our fabric, to our constitution, to all of us. And I would think some basic decorum and respect would be not too much to ask for a couple of minutes. We can fight social justice, absolutely. We can do a lot of things. But do we have to do it when we're putting the flag up there? That's the argument, Del Wilber, that I hear back from most patriots that get really ripped off. What's your take?
You know, I would agree. I mean, I was born back in the 50s and raised in a family that, I mean, everybody in my family served in the military, and including myself. And then, you know, I went on to other things. One thing, in addition to being an intelligence officer, I also spent a dozen years as a police officer, too. So I know just enough about both professions to be a little bit dangerous. And, you know, I'm friends with Tom Jackson, who was the chief of police of Ferguson when all of the rioting took place in that. And, you know, there were so many false narratives that sprung out of that situation. And I see the same thing with this campaign with Nike, with, you know, they're basically making a, in my view anyway, they're making a hero in a sense out of Colin Kaepernick, when I don't think there's anything heroic at all about what he has been doing. And as I wrote in my column, there's some real heroes out there that you know, that are fighting and dying. And
Del, does Nike, was this at the end of the day, from a business standpoint, now strictly business standpoint, from the boardroom, was this a good move for Nike or was it a bad move?
Well, I mean, yeah, probably, but, you know, when you consider that a large percentage of their product is made in Asian countries where they're paying 20 cents an hour for people working 14 to 16 hours a day, I guess they're making a lot of profitable moves, and this certainly will, you know, I guess be included in that that category. So from a purely business standpoint, yeah, probably.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And thanks for saying the way you said that. That was very interesting. David, I've got to ask you back. Was this a good move by Nike? Was this a good business move by them? Yes or no, you think?
I think no. I think, frankly, long run, long term, I agree with Dell. It's a, you know, they're going to be exposed as the hypocrites they are, you know, the literally placing their marketing or their manufacturing in third world countries where people working at what we would consider slave wages. And it's a in the conditions in China and Vietnam, these things that have been exposed. You wonder did they really want to jump into this field? And in no way was I condoning the idea, but I'm just saying my idea is that there are unintended consequences. It's forcing us to defend our own ideas, and that in itself is a good thing that we exercise. You know, it's good to bring up. You and I, all of us here, we have core beliefs, and those need to be brought out, examined, and defended from time to time because it actually enhances them and makes them stronger. And I'm with Dell in that, you know, this is a very important time, I think, for us to reflect on those traditional freedoms and those traditional values that have built this nation.
Right, right. Very good. Dr. Bev, is Colin Kaepernick an American hero?
Colin is an American. To say that he is a hero, I'm going to leave that for history to decide. I do believe that in terms of what Nike has done, in terms of this 30th anniversary commemoration, it strikes a conversation. It gets people to thinking. Do I agree with the slogan in terms of, what does he say? His slogan is believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything.
That's right.
That sacrificing everything gives me my stomach a little turn because that in itself can be divisive. It can bring out that racial and racism and police brutality and all that kind of thing. To sacrifice everything, I'm not really with that. However, I do support Kaepernick in his ideas, in his beliefs, and his ability to say that, to put that out there.
Well, because it's, again, because it's part of our freedoms, it's part of our Constitution, it's part of our rights. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
I
agree with his just do it and sacrificing everything.
Yeah,
because to the unintelligible, to the ignorant, to the folks who are not looking at facts, that gives them a visual of things.
Wow.
And I would echo some of what the doctor just said. And I don't have any hatred or ill feelings towards Kaepernick, but I certainly don't view him as a hero. What I view him as is someone who is misguided. You know, when he wears a T-shirt to a press conference that basically glorifies Fidel Castro, you know, that tells me he doesn't really have an understanding of history. And if he doesn't have an understanding of that history, you know, how good is his understanding of the history that he's... I think he's just misguided more than anything.
The motivation of Nike is clear. It's money. They did check this out. They've raked in $43 million extra bucks worth of media exposure for the controversial ad already, just in those first couple of days there. And it's now reported that their online sales have grown by 31% increases, by the way. And so this is a big boost, in which they're thanking Kaepernick for that. So if anybody says that, you know, this wasn't a business move by Nike, I mean, let's face it, if you want to get publicity, any good advertising or public relations executive would tell you to get into people's face. I mean, I know because I did this myself for 25 years, controversial campaigns and what have you for companies. It's not unusual, David, that companies like this do this. Nike probably was just looking to hit the bottom line a little bit. Initially, their stocks went down slightly, but since then they've rebounded. But you're saying in the long run, you think that's not going to be the case. You think this will taint Nike on the permanent basis for the long road. Is that what you're saying, David?
That's my belief. I think, I'll tell you, part of the problem is there's an underlying corrosive nature to this particular ad campaign. Like I'm saying, I don't think they intended to have a nationwide dialogue on the nature of sacrifice and belief, defending your beliefs. I almost think that they like the idea that the divisiveness would create a marketing stimulus. I don't believe, like I said, I don't believe anybody sat in a marketing meeting and said, I know, let's get a national debate on the nature of the heroic, on the nature of valor, on the nature of sacrifice and freedom. They're like, hey, you know, we've had this guy on payroll since he got since he cut his contract with San Francisco. He's never left the payroll of Nike, you know, so let's go for it. You know, and in history, we'll have to decide.
You know, the other piece of this, in the final seconds of this segment, guys, is the NFL, the National Football League. Attendance is down across the board. Advertising fees are off. Some folks have left. The league has been tainted, yet they started the season where the president even came out and thanked them initially, then realized it wasn't a good thing, with the fact that they could allow the players could stay in the locker room, and they've now since changed that as well, which, whether that would have solved the problem or not, probably not. But the point is, the NFL also, a lot of people believe their shiny days are done. They'll never be the same league. Dr. Bev, what do you think on that? Real quickly again, let's keep this real short, but do you think the NFL, that they've been tainted from all this, and do they ever come back again, do you think, or has it been a permanent scar for them?
Well, you know, being a sports fan, especially for the NFL, listen, what's going on? Will they bounce back? They never really left. But our America, this time that we're living in now, with this shock jock behavior, this inappropriate behavior of name calling, this inappropriateness of not going for the facts, and I would tend to let my listeners go to Beto O'Rourke. He is taking on Ted Cruz. Listen at what he has to say about this subject and the facts of why we even got here in the first place. Number one, this should not have been taken to the football field. That is where I go for my fun, to listen.
Amen.
To
we see, agree.
To have a good day. And when I'm in my seat, in the stands, I'm surrounded by people of all creeds, walks, religions, in terms of politics. And you know
all
what?
Right, well,
on that
all
one
right.
day during that game, we are all together as one.
All right. So you, like all of us, were offended that you had to tolerate and put up with that nonsense while you're watching football on your dime, your time. Now, do you still spend a dime in time quickly? Do you still watch or will pay for football? Yes or no?
No, last year I boycotted. Yes, it blew it for me. I can't support that. It takes the fun out of the game.
Well said, Dave. You were probably surprised to hear Dr. Bev's answer on that, right?
Well, I kind of think she was leaning that way, and I agree with her. I watch football for the love of the sport, not politics. I haven't watched an NFL game in 2 years, except at a friend's house. I had to watch the Super Bowl, but I'll say this, that college season's kicking off, and I love it. I love college football still, right. But I'm going to say that very soon, in business colleges all over this country, this will be one of the new case studies on how to destroy an organization and a business.
Okay.
It has been so poorly managed. It's horrific.
All right. All right, Dale, last word for you, buddy. We'll let you close it out here. You know, Matt, you hear all the, I mean, I like what we've just talked about, the discussions, but I think a lot of the people you know in your circles there, they probably are not participating anymore in football either, are they, or are they?
Oh, I haven't watched a down. I didn't watch a single down of play last year. I won't be watching this year. And I'll just say that I think Pat Tillman would have been a much better choice.
There you go. Big thank you to each of them here on this conversation, friends. I also want to mention to you, Dale Wilbur is a columnist, a weekly columnist on America Out Loud, and his column on this is called If the Shoe Fits, Wear It. And its rate is at the top of America Out Loud. Just go to our platform now, friends, and you'll be able to read that article if you haven't already. He's got a lot of great writings on there. He's a prolific writer and does incredibly well. Also, Dr. Bev is a show host and has a show on the weekends called Emotions Are Us. And she gets into all kinds of things. She's a very interesting psychotherapist, as you can tell by listening to her today. So I encourage you to look at that. And we so appreciate and value all of you here today. Up next, we're going to take a really deep dive into two things here. One, as you already know, the Supreme Court with Brett Kavanaugh. But the other thing is former President Barack Obama comes out and has some very interesting things to say the least, in regards to President Trump. I think another round of fireworks are probably in play. We're waiting for the tweets any moment here now, friends. We'll be back as Viewpoint continues on.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. President Obama comes out and does a speech, typically what former presidents don't do, and they opine on not just the current state, but the current president. And that's unusual in American politics. In fact, I don't recall a president coming out and calling one on the carpet like this as he did. So I think a lot of people kind of knew this was maybe coming. And now what happens there, and are the gloves off, or what takes place next, we will find out what happens, friends. Let's get to our discussion. And please welcome on the show here, Brian Gold is here. Brian served in the United States Army and U.S. Special Forces for over two decades. He now works with the Department of Defense and is the CEO of Applied Solutions Consulting. Also joining us back on the show, Ilana Friedman is a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst. And you heard Ilana early on, and she's back with us for this conversation here. So let's start first, guys. If you don't mind, I'd like to talk about the President Barack Obama, the former president, his speech. Now, this was one he did here in the University of Illinois, I understand, is where this took place. And it was there was a lot of opining going on there as he came into this. And so he says here, let me say this to you. This is him speaking now, and I quote, "It did not start with Donald Trump. He is a symptom, not the cause. He's just capitalizing on resentments that politicians have been fanning for years." This is what former President Obama said. He went on to say, "The policies of resentment and paranoia has unfortunately found a home in the Republican Party." Wow, wow, wow. All right, Brian Gold, let's start with you and get you. Do you recall, first of all, a former president coming out and saying such things against a sitting president?
And thanks for having me on again. No, not at all. I don't remember him having such a boisterous, and this is not his first time he's spoken out, for sure. This is just one of his most publicized ones. I'm very, very surprised that he came out and spoke against the current administration. It's normally considered bad politics and in bad form to do so.
Ilana, he referred to himself 102 times, it's been documented now during this. Well, don't laugh too hard now, but 102 times during the 64-minute speech here, okay? Again, this was at the University of Illinois. Twice a minute. Yeah, twice. That's what it equates to, yeah. He was there, Ilana, to, let's tell folks now so they know, to accept the school's Ethics in Government Award. Now, get a load of this. Ethics in government. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, don't you laugh
Does
too
he
hard,
know how
Brian.
To spell it?
Yeah, right. Well, that was the award he got. And to offer his take on the state of our democracy. Okay, Ilana, again, this was pretty in your face. I mean, how do you think, now this happened a couple days ago. This was on Friday, by the way. So today being Sunday morning, what do you think happens now? Is this a start of a bigger a feud with Trump and Obama, or do you think this will settle down? I'm wondering. What do you think is going to happen there?
No, I think, first of all, there are a bunch of things going on here. I think the Democrats are starting to go into a panic mode. They're calling out all kinds of polls that are showing them with two-digit leads. I don't think that's really what's happening. I think they are anticipating something close to a red wave. and coming in the upcoming elections, and they're scared because there's a lot of scandal coming down the road it's a scandal that is going to implicate Obama himself. If you recall, the Peter Strzok and his paramour had this email relationship or texting relationship, and he said that
Lisa Page, you mean, and Peter Strzok, yeah.
Yeah, that the president was calling the shots.
Right, right.
And that had to do with this whole investigation. So we're looking at something, and it's now being investigated. So by the Department of Justice. So I think he is afraid that this is all going to come out, that all of the backroom dealing, the meeting between the President Clinton and, I don't even like to call him president, but Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch on the tarmac, all those things were organized. This was not, none of it was spontaneous. And the president had his hand in everything, and to the extent that according to some sources, I'll play the New York Times, and I won't name my sources. The Carter Page FISA warrant was put out because Loretta Lynch found a loophole in the law, and she was able to push through the application without a hearing, and that's part of what's coming out now.
All right.
But the loophole was that the president could approve the Carter Page warrant without a hearing. And that puts him right in the middle of it.
Ilana, do you think there's any chance that the players that you're speaking about right now, it was mentioned earlier, do you think there's any chance that this op-ed New York Times piece that is out there, do you think there's any chance the Democrats are behind that?
Oh, I think absolutely. In fact, I think maybe this is a very closely orchestrated attempt to... another attempt to bring down the president by discrediting him.
Wow.
But the interesting thing is that the people who are named both in the op-ed and in the forthcoming book by Woodward have denied saying any of the things that they're accused of saying.
All right.
Is either this is pure fabrication, or it's based on some slim semblance of a truth that, you know, people talk, people say silly things.
Right.
But
these
things can be exploded into something serious.
Brian, I want to get you to chime in on some of this. Ilana brings up some very interesting points to me. Mm-hmm. I did not expect her to go there, but very fascinating. I like the fact she did go there in bringing in some of the Peter Strzok, Lisa Page conversation and some of these under motives here that are happening with some of the Obama operatives, will you, kind of thing, and the op-ed, if that could have been done with Democratic operatives instead of, as they say, a senior White House official, as they say, or whatever, administration official.
Well,
what do you think?
I think there's a coordinated effort here, and I'll have to give the Democrats a lot of credit. They are a much more organized and coordinating element than the Republicans are when it comes to fighting these kind of battles. I think if you look across the spectrum, I think this was more about the fact that I will have to agree with President Obama on one issue, and that is this is probably the most important midterm our country's had in this generation, if not the last two generations.
Okay.
And I think they're pulling out all the plugs for that. And that's why he's on the circuit right now, because their normal windbag of deceit is Hillary Clinton, and she's just not favored right now. She's not in good light. She can't really go out and speak and really keep a good tone. She's not drawing the base. And President Obama is really good at that. He is very good at activating the Democratic base. It's how he won two elections. He was phenomenal at it. So he's back on the circuit for that reason. But if you look at across the spectrum, you have the op-ed coming out, just came out. You have the book that's coming out.
Right.
You also have some unprecedented activities by the Department of Justice. Right now, there's an investigation going on for one of the congressmen in the District of San Diego, which was 70 days prior to the midterms. Right. It's always been a standing DOJ policy never to open or announce an investigation on a seated congressional official or politician 90 days prior to an election. It's considered faux pas. It's not the right thing to do. It unduly affects an election because he may be charged, he may be investigated, but we're still innocent until proven guilty. And until you're guilty, they hate to try to sway an election like that. But yet you still have the Department of Justice starting those investigations 70 days after the primary. Mm-hmm. So you can't put another Republican in there. And you have it 70 days before the midterms. So they're pulling out all the stops. This Kavanaugh hearing fell right into the hands of the Democrats and pulling out all the stops and activating the base right before the midterms.
All right. So this thing was unbelievable, what happened with the Supreme Court, the hearings there with Brett Kavanaugh. What was your whole takeaway? It was a fascinating hearing. It's very, very, very entertaining, huh, Ilana? Sickening, too.
It was both fascinating and entertaining. The hearings, I think, started, and they waited about 7 seconds before Kamala Harris and Richard Blumenthal started asking for adjournment. And they kept interrupting the chairman, Chuck Grassley. They didn't even let him speak. They kept just shouting out over his voice. But what was interesting, with these documents, Cory Booker tried to fall on his sword, but he missed. He compared himself to Spartacus.
Oh, was that a
lie? And he made the phony assertion that he was releasing confidential documents, which it turned out had been released early that morning. And then Kamala Harris tried to jump on that bandwagon, but she also failed. And then she started referring to Kavanaugh's pocket constitution as that book you carry.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't even want to call it by name.
Yeah.
But she said she was going to ask him about unenumerated rights that she says don't appear in that book you carry. Right. And he was very, very cool, like you said. He just smiled and said, "The Constitution, it is in that book I carry.
That book
the Constitution
you carry.
Protects unenumerated rights." And the whole purpose behind it, I believe, is to disrupt the hearings to such an extent that they are postponed, and the judge would not be appointed or rejected until after the midterm.
Yeah. You know, I have a rule and a policy, guys. I tell you both now, tell everybody right now. Never insult two documents you never want to insult in your life. You never want to insult or use as a prop the Bible or the United States Constitution. You know that, Brian Gould. You never insult those two. Right,
I could agree with you more. I take a little bit different stance on the reasoning behind the outburst. It was pretty evident before this ever started that Mitch McConnell and Grassley were working together, and there's no way that confirmation hearing was going to stop. Mm-hmm. McConnell was orchestrating stuff on the main floor. Grassley was keeping control of the subcommittee. There's no way that's going to stop. So the Democrats knew that was going to go through, whether they liked it or not. But you have to remember, right now, the DNC is broke. They're in debt. Mm-hmm. The RNC is pretty flush with cash to support elections, mm-hmm. but they're not. So if you look at the actions that are going on, what you had was the most televised Supreme Court hearing ever. I mean, it was an all-eyes-on fight, which meant free press for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. So they got a chance to excite their base and get people excited and moved for free. And then if you look at the Obama speech, same thing. It was free press. The stuff going on in San Diego, free press. The op-ed that just came out, free press. The book coming out by Woodward, free press. I mean, somebody paid for it, but, you know, the DNC didn't have to. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you have all these free platforms that were given the DNC to do their speeches on, when what we should be doing is cutting them off because they don't have the money to do it any other way. And if the RNC wants to be smart and the Republicans want to be smart, they'll stop giving them platforms to argue on and start working on things that are going to work well for the RNC.
Well, you know, Brian,
things like that.
If Cory Booker does run in 2020, let's say, and many people suspect he is going to do that, I have to tell you that you know what his nickname is going to be, don't you, Brian?
Spartacus, I assume.
Spartacus.
That's it, buddy. That's it.
No, he will never live it down. That will be his name forever.
Yeah, I mean, he got it. And like you say, he tried to fall on a sword. Said he fell on his ass.
Well, he did.
But that's another story, you know.
Yeah, right.
A big thank you to Brian Gould, Ilana Friedman. Friends, we thank you again for being part of this Viewpoint this Sunday. Certainly the fastest growing news magazine. And thank you for sharing it out there with folks. And remind you to tune in again every Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. 6 p.m. is the encore. Goes to podcast Sunday afternoon. And always, as I tell you, Viewpoint This Sunday delivers an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. While we don't discriminate against an opinion, the main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.